Welcome to the Foresight Health Roundup podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Thursday, September 12th. Yesterday was Patriot Day. We honored those who served and those we lost in the September 11th terrorist attack. Patriots are not those who stormed our nation's capital on January 6, 2021, and tried to overthrow our government. Those people are called treasonists, insurrectionists, and criminals, and they all belong in jail. Now that we have that clear, let's talk about something that isn't so clear, and that's the role of technology in solving the healthcare labor crisis. To tell us where those two lines intersect are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Merchantson, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you two doing this morning? Dave?
Well, I'm doing fantastic. This is my absolute favorite time of the year in Chicago. The humidity's come off. We've got these long, warm days that are cool in the morning and cool at night. Weather shouldn't influence our mood, but it sure does mine. And right now, I'm a happy guy.
Yeah, nothing like having the windows open at night. That's great. Thanks, Dave. Julie, how are you?
Well, I am in our nation's capital, which was a very interesting place to be this week. And a couple of members of my team were at a bar, and they said the bar was silent because everybody was watching the debate. And that would only happen in Washington, D.C. Like, kind of amazing.
Hanging on every word.
Yep.
That's great. Thanks, Julie. Now, before we talk about technology and healthcare staffing, let's talk about how technology changed your careers or how you do what you do. Dave, looking back at your career, whether that's before or after investment banking, what was the first technology that made you say, this is going to change how I do my job?
Oh, there are so many. Fire, right? But
Okay.
I would say it was the emergence of the Hewlett-Packard 12-seat calculator in the early 80s when I was in graduate school. Had reverse entry. It allowed you to do programming, had incredible analytic power, all built into the size of a typical calculator, was able to do advanced financing functions, including discounted cash flows and so on. You know, before that calculator came along, when investment bankers were doing bond issues, they had to go to this big, thick interest rate book to figure out what the amortization factor was for any number of given years and months. And suddenly we had in our hands this calculator that was incredible. And this was before personal computers arrived. And I still use mine today. It was a breakthrough moment.
Yeah, and stuck with you. That's great. Thanks, Dave. Julie, how about you? What piece of technology in your career first made you say, this is a real game changer?
Well, I grew up with a very tech-forward mother, and Judy, she was amazing.
Yeah.
She taught computer programming at the vocational school up the road. So she taught COBOL, C++, I mean, all those ancient programming languages. So I was exposed to computers, quite early in life. However, it wasn't until I went to college that I had my first personal computer, the Macintosh SE. I mean, who calls it a Macintosh anymore? And it had a floppy drive, but it had a floppy drive for the little floppy drives that were hard. You remember that when they went from like kind of bendable to hard? So that was a game changer for me. But it was really email that did it for me, because I could then communicate with teachers electronically and I didn't have to print out papers anymore. I could actually email papers to teachers. I mean, novel concept. And here we are in healthcare, 30 plus years later, still faxing paper.
How far we've come and how far we have to go. Thanks, Julie. For me, it was the word processor. Before that, I thought the old IBM Selectric 2 with that interchangeable type ball and the correction tape was the best. But, getting the ability to correct a mistake or rewrite something without retyping the whole paper or article was a moment in time I'll never forget, a real dream come true. It was like, how did we even write before? The question is technology a dream come true for healthcare workers? And there's your transition. Actually, the transition into the topic happened at the end of last week's show when we discussed whether the strong support of organized labor by the Harris-Walz ticket will somehow blunt the adoption of staffing-related technology in healthcare. And as always, as if on cue, two new reports are out that amplify that potential conflict. Mercer, the big benefits consulting firm, released a report that projected a shortage of 100,000 critical healthcare workers by 2028. That's in just 4 years. By critical, Mercer means caregivers like doctors, nurses, nurse practitioners, nursing assistants, home health and personal care aides, and technicians. 30,000 of the 100,000 worker shortage are nurses. The report said one way to deal with the shortage is by automating tasks through technology. Meanwhile, the Center for Connected Medicine and Class Research released the results of an in-depth survey of 55 health system executives on their views of technology. The big news was that 85% of the execs cited artificial intelligence as the most exciting emerging technology for healthcare. A distant second were remote patient monitoring and coding and medical records. More interesting was the ranking of healthcare problems that could best be solved with technology. At the top of the list was patient care. At the bottom, staffing. So on one hand, you have a staffing shortage that could be alleviated by automation, but on the other, you have execs who think that technology isn't the answer. Dave, what am I missing? What's the disconnect here? And what would you do from a policy perspective to connect it?
Well, ignorance is not a defense when you commit a crime, when you break the law. Strategic ignorance shouldn't be a defense for failing to adapt to obvious macro and market forces. But as it pertains to labor, what does all of this advancing Gen AI portend? As the machines get up to and ultimately exceed human beings in the ability to think and create. Well, guess what? They're coming after people that perform non-routine cognitive functions, which is basically probably 80% of all white-collar jobs. And healthcare, more than any other industry, is a target for this type of machine-led efficiency and productivity improvement. And so the healthcare administrators need to get off that mountain, avoid the avalanche, and start thinking about the ways in which they can relieve the day-to-day burdens, the administrative burdens of their clinical staffs, so that they can then turn their attention with full enthusiasm to working with patients, helping understand and solve their particular health and healthcare problems, and stop trying to think about how do we incrementally improve on the existing models, which are, for the most part, failing fairly catastrophically. Our current approaches to healthcare staffing clearly aren't working. More of the same approach will guarantee more of the same dismal results. So eliminate burden, take advantage of the technology, improve the working lives of clinical staff, and by the way, get ready for a world where the technology will augment human capabilities and improve outcomes with a need for lesser staffing. And by the way, it couldn't come in a more appropriate time, because by 2030, we're going to have more people in this country over the age of 65, therefore dealing with chronic illnesses. And we're going to have more people over the age of 65 than children under the age of 18. And when you start to think about that shrinking worker retiree ratio and the labor challenges that will bring into the system, we're already experiencing the first waves of this, and the fact that there won't be as many workers to help fund the costs, we have to come up with better ways of caring for, treating people, and getting much more productivity out of the workers that are in the field.
Right. Yeah. Technology as magic pill, not poison pill. I get it. Thanks, Dave. Julie, any questions for Dave?
Well, Dave, I'm curious how you think about doctors specifically and how technology will affect them.
Oh, I hope they're ready, Julie. I hope they're ready. They should be afraid, very afraid. When we think about how we select and train doctors, we're basically looking for people with great memories that are very good at pattern recognition so that they can do accurate diagnosis. And honestly, the machines, if they can't already, will very soon be able to do a better job of diagnosis than the best doctor with the most experience in a particular specialty. So when you take pattern recognition out of what we ask doctors to do, which is, you know, as high as 80 to 90% of what doctors do, diagnose, then suddenly we've got a major challenge on our hand for how do we reacculturate these people into a system where they can work with the machines and let the machines do what the machines do well, which is pattern recognition without bias, early diagnosis, and then allow the profession to evolve again, where caregivers and particularly doctors can be less of the captain of the ship and more part of a cohesive team that collectively works to improve the health and the healthcare of people within their circle of influence and doing it earlier.
Yeah, we're going to need some effective change management programs in the future if it comes true as you've described, Dave. Thanks. Julie, did I create a straw man with these two reports just to beat it down? What's the disconnect here and what would you do from a market innovation perspective to connect it?
Well, I guess I read the report on technology a little bit differently. You know, while staffing may be 10th on the list, the question is what's really meant by staffing? Like I could interpret that as technology to manage resource pools or human resources in general or training systems, all sorts of things. But instead, I think what we're really talking about is whether there are innovations to improve clinician efficiency and effectiveness. And you know, that's largely what numbers 1 through 9 are. And of course, number 4 being provider burnout, you know, big bucket. And here's what I'm hearing from health systems out there across the country. Two things I'm hearing. And these two things would tell me that their priorities are not entirely aligned with how technology can actually help deal with these staffing shortages and surpluses, which of course, you know, there's a lot of logical explanations as to what one can do. But, you know, the first priority that's out of whack is that a lot of systems are still prioritizing technologies that can help generate revenue. And if they're not generating revenue, they want to automate the back office. And typically, neither of these two things really touch the frontline clinician and help with provider burnout, could help create leverage around where there are shortages, et cetera. So, that, you know, got to get past those priorities. Number two issue, you know, there are some systems, I mean, I would argue probably a lot more than I even hear this from, that are still dealing with the basics of making some of these clinician enabling technologies actually work in their four walls. Many, for example, have to upgrade fiber. And I mean, literally like other foundational technology components within their super old four walls just to make technology work. Some are still adopting RFID tags to actually have more data to manage where everything is and how to optimize the actual operation of the hospital. So, you know, those things don't necessarily directly enable a nurse, physician, or even a patient in a way that helps provide some leverage in all the top of the license practicing opportunities. So, of course, health systems are going to get through this phase to the other side so they can focus on the important things. But, you know, how fast will it be? And it'll still be super variable across systems, and competitors are eating around the edges today. So we're just still dealing with the pace. I will say one thing I found funny in the report was the graph that was titled, "What Technology Has Seen the Most Progress in the Past 2 Years?" Hmm. And I kind of chuckled because the top of the list was virtual care and telehealth, followed by patient engagement. And I'm sure this is just how the question was worded and how, but you know, how the respondent interpreted it is important, right? But these two technologies, I would argue, have not made much progress at all in the last couple of years. But maybe the business strategies have come around to actually fuel adoption. So that's possible. But I don't think the technologies have really gotten better. We are farther along with things like integration and interoperability that, you know, definitely saves time for frontline providers with FHIR and TEFCA. And I mean, unfortunately, a lot of systems moving off server to Epic just to deal with the cost of record sharing. And a lot of technologies are getting better really quickly, like data analytics, clinical documentation. You know, they talked a lot about Nabla and Abridge and all the ambient listening technologies and coding automation. I mean, I know we've talked about RCM some lately. You know, they've all improved a lot in the last couple of years. And this is absolutely going to provide some leverage at the front line. So what would I do? I would really start to look at the technologies that matter and provide leverage. I mean, a lot of what Dave said.
That is a great reality check, right? What's happening on the front lines, and what you're saying is they might not have the wrong amps in their electrical system. It's like an old house, right? That's correct.
Totally.
Thanks, Julie. Dave, any questions for Julie?
Well, Julie, I thought when you were going through your list of what worked the best, I thought you were going to say beepers.
eFax is where it's at.
And that gets my sort of the heart of my question for you today, which is being clear-eyed about the strengths and weaknesses of the current healthcare system. How do you believe the technological imperatives emerging within the broader marketplace, and put Gen AI right at the top of the list, will manifest within healthcare? Are health systems going to be able to be like Africa and go straight to cell phones, avoid landlines, or is it going to continue to be this kind of forced march, not conducted very well, toward modest improvement while the rest of the world just continues to race ahead?
We're not in the position to leapfrog the way that some other countries have been able to do with most modern technology. I do think that healthcare is working its way through where the human needs to be in the loop. I mean, I just caught up with one of our incredible listeners, Cam Matthews from CityBlock, and we talked about where digital is making a dent with their Medicaid and under-resourced populations. And, you know, given their own platform they've created, the partnerships that they're working on with specialty providers, all their things. Like, she's so articulate about, you know, where things are and potentially will and won't work in the clinical model. Everything is really about finding where the human needs to be in the loop to make technology work.
Thanks, Julie. Well, I still have the electric typewriter I used in college, but that just means I like old things. I'll never go back. And I think if caregivers got a taste of what technology can take off their plate, they'd eat it up.
I'm thinking about your earlier question about technological breakthroughs. And I got to say, when they created that little kind of piece of tape that you could put in to correct types, typing mistakes, that was a game changer. I forget what they called that, but it was a game changer.
Corrective.
I certainly used it on my Selectrics.
Classic.
You guys are
stuff.
Dating yourselves, by the way. I hate to tell you.
Yeah, we're old. We're old, Julie. Get used to it.
You know. Okay. With that, let's talk about other big news that happened this past week. It wasn't all bad, was it? Julie, what else happened that we should know about?
God, I think like I always go to the worst stories. I don't know why, but I read today that sterilizations in women rose pretty significantly after Roe was overturned. So, you know, we're just seeing the data is really not appealing on what's happening out there on women's rights.
Yeah, sliding backwards. Dave, what other news is worth mentioning?
Well, I'm going to go to the debate. And, you know, there was discussion of healthcare policy at the debate, and Kamala Harris really just talked about advancing some of the initiatives that have been underway in the Biden administration relating to drug prices mostly. And Donald Trump, in a way only he can, said that he didn't have a healthcare plan, but he had concepts of a plan. And I guess the point I wanted to make is I think healthcare is flying under the radar in an election sense right now. And that's actually a good thing, because it's so hard to understand perverse incentives and how things really work versus how we would like them to work. that when healthcare is under the radar, it gives policymakers more opportunity to get into the works and make corrections. So I'm actually cautiously optimistic that healthcare doesn't blow up into a major political issue so that whatever new government comes in next year can really go to work on healthcare and address some obvious solutions without it being treated like a pinata, healthcare policy pinata.
Well, I think the next time I'm asked what we're doing this weekend, I'm going to say I have the concepts of a plan. See if that flies.
Your wife's going to love that.
I'll let you know. Thanks, Dave, and thanks, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can subscribe to The Roundup on Spotify, Apple Podcast, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.